Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Guys, welcome to the Full Blast Podcast. I'm Jeff Fader, and let's get right into it. What do you say? My first things first, I want to thank my friends at Broadbeck Ironworks, makers of the 2x72 grinder. This is an awesome grinder, grinding machine company. They also make power hammers and other things. And if you go to BroadbeckIronworks.com, put in the promo code KnifeTalk10. You can get 10% off all the grinders, attachments, parts, everything you want to get squared away. If you don't have to be a knife maker to use one of these grinders. Thing is sick. If you're a sculptor, if you're a woodworker, these are awesome. If you're removing material, this is the grinder for you. All the attachments are awesome. And if you don't have a grinder, a Broadbeck grinder, and you want to try out their attachments are very retrofittable to other things. So definitely check out what's going on at Broadbeck Ironworks. Next are my friends at EvenHeat, manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. Find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com, and especially if you're trying to make tools or you're trying to harden hammers or you're trying to work with stainless or Damascus or Baker Forge stuff or any of that stuff, you really need very precise temperatures. And the EvenHeat is going to get you there. The solid state drive, the tap control, it kills the doubt. Ladies and gentlemen, kills the doubt. So definitely check out what's going on over my friends at evenheat-kiln.com. They have different options. You can have a 110 machine. You can have a 220 machine. You can have a long machine. You can have a short machine. Don't matter. Don't worry about that. They also have these amazing temper ovens. I know a lot of you knife makers are like, well, I want to use my EvenHeat, but I can't get it down from 1,000 degrees to 400 degrees. Well, they have now a dedicated temper oven, so definitely check out what's going on at evenheat-kiln.com. I want to thank my friends at Maritime Knife Supply. That's Lawrence Lake. And he, for all your knife making needs, belts, abrasives, steels, kilns, forges, presses, heat treating ovens, anvils, and more, and more, and more. Let me tell you, he sent me some, and I bought a pile of the 1080 hex bar. Different sizes. I think there was inch and eighth. There's 3/8 or around 3/8. There was like 3/4 and 7/8. Stuff is awesome. If you're trying to forge out some integral bolsters, it gives you a great starting stock for that bolster. So definitely go over to maritimeknifesupply.com. And if you get their belts, their 10-pack of abrasive belts, you're going to get 10% off everything. So definitely check out the maritimeknifesupply.com. And I hope they had a great time sponsoring the Great Lakes Custom Knife Show. I only hear great things, and I'm a huge fan of everything that Lawrence has done. And he's been such a huge supporter of the knife-making community and being involved with the New England School of Metalwork and just being such a helpful guy. So if that's the very least on why you'd want to support a person like Lawrence Lake or Maritime Knife Supply, that's good enough for me. Next are my friends at Trojan Horse Forge, makers of the Stable Rail Knife Finishing Vise. This vise is sick. It's your one-stop finishing deck vise that's going to make you more comfortable doing what you're doing. You're bringing your knife making to another level. You have an amazing deck for hand sanding, super comfortable. You can put it in your vise anyway. It's super comfortable in it. And it supports your distal taper. It supports your integral bolster. It really is just an incredible, incredible vise. And then you to use it for the handle, it just gives you so much versatility, and it's going to make you more comfortable. And if you're more comfortable, you're probably going to do a better job. So definitely check out what's going on over at Trojan Horse Forge. And if you put in the promo code FULLBLAST10, you can get 10% off everything, including the handle press attachment for hidden tang knives and the T4 Sentinel oil. So go to TrojanHorseForge.com, and there's free shipping, and Full Blast 10 gets you 10% off. And their payment plans are available. So if you're worried that someone's going to see some bills, you can go on a, you know, do the little bit here, a little bit there. Nobody knows nothing. All right, you know what I'm saying? Don't worry about that. So I'm squared away with them. My next, there are my friends at BakerForge.com. That's Baker Forge and Tool on Instagram. Koi sent me some incredible steel. They're exotic steels. Their cladding is immaculate. I've used so much of their stuff, and I've never once had a flaw or delamination or a problem. The stuff is just elite. And when it comes annealed, so you can use your bandsaw, you can use your grinder, you can drill the holes. Everything's easy. And then when you're pre-grinding it, you get the copper and the brass, and it allows you to kind of see where your core is. And it's just like everything about it is so easy. And the finishing is really easy. The heat treating is easy. They have all the specs and information to make you successful. They give you the tools to make this steel as optimal as possible. I mean, it's like, and then they figured out how to help you finish it. And how they help you finish it is you use Gator Piss. That's their proprietary etching. You don't have to add water. It's ready to go. A lot of times you have to add water to ferric chloride, and you got to make a mix. And then is it diluted enough? Gator Piss is ready to roll. And if you go to BakerForge.com and then you put in the promo code FULLBLAST, you're going to get 10% off everything, all their steels and their Gator Piss and everything like that. Or you can go to Texas Farrier Supply. My friends over at Texas Farrier Supply are sponsoring the podcast. And if you want, you put in the promo code KNIFETALK10 and you can get 10% off everything there, including they're starting to stock Gator Piss. So definitely check out Texas Farrier Supply if you're a blacksmith, if you're a bladesmith, if you're interested in farrier work. I know they do a lot of events, knife making. They got the rhino wet. They got all that stuff. Go to TexasFarrierSupply.com and definitely get the Gator Piss. And definitely support BakerForge.com. And all the links are in the show notes. So all the details of the discounts and all that stuff is all there. So definitely check out BakerForge.com and definitely get some of that steel. Because even if you're a little intimidated, this stuff is just, it's just a dime. It's unkillable. And I am a pussy. When it comes to like difficult stuff, I kind of squirm out of some of it. And I'm just like, it sounds like it's a pain in the ass. This is not a pain in the ass. That's your new slug line. Dear BakerForge.com. Baker Forge steel. It's not a pain in the ass. It's maximum juice, minimum squeeze. Okay, so definitely check out that and check out it. Get some stuff at Texas Ferry Supply. I want to thank my friends at Total Boat. TotalBoat.com/FULLBLAST. That's the link that gets you to get some discount and gives me street cred. So I want to thank them very much because they've sent me a lot. I use their two-part epoxy exclusively. I love it. It's marine-grade epoxy, and it hardens well, and they sell dyes specifically for the Total Boat. There are some companies that say, yeah, you can just use any dye. This dye is specifically formulated for Total Boat, so it gives you maximum adhesion. It gives you a great hardness. It gives you the flexibility that you want. Stuff is awesome. And the thick set fathom, if you want to start getting involved with hybrid handle materials and you don't want bubbles and you don't want to buy pressure pots and all this shit, get yourself some of that fathom thick set. So go to totalboat.com/fullblast. It's good enough for Keith Thiessen, Derek Vermalden, Keith Johnson, Keith Mitchell. It's good enough for you. So I want to thank my friends at Total Boat. Also want to thank my friends at GL Hansen & Sons. That's GL Hansen & Sons, gcarta.bigcartel.com for gcarta, which is a unique composite of natural fibers and fabrics mixed under pressure with epoxy and heat. Stuff is awesome, and to the point where I'm now getting requests specifically for custom knives Specifically, they're using, this is the first time they're using the name brand of G.L. Hanson & Sons. They say, what kind of G car did you have from G.L. Hanson & Sons? Well, we have Bofa, we have Ripple Cut, we have Tuxini, we have Mahi Mahi, we have Radio Worm Gicardo, we have Pheasant, Colorama, Hoopla, Electric Fuzz, all that stuff. Stuff is great, and it's easy to work with, and it's highly, 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 it's just beautiful. And if, especially if you're looking, and if you're just like, well, you know, what I use them for bolsters. I cut pieces off, and then I'll use them for bolsters. So they're very versatile. They're really give you a lot of razzle-dazzle and a lot of opportunities for success. So definitely check out what's going on over at BigCartel.com. And I want to thank my friends at Tormek. I'm going to be going to Sweden with the Tormek guys, I think in 2 weeks. When this comes out, maybe in a week and a half, 2 weeks. And I'm so excited to see their factory. I'm going to give a whole thing. We're going to do a podcast out there. And I can't wait to see what's going on. Tormek has changed my opinion on... Tormek has made me a better knife maker because their black T... The T4... The T8 sharpening system is awesome. It's really awesome. And it's so effective as a way for you to think about stone sharpening, but like water wheel. It's a water wheel with different stones, and it gives you a more... It helps you to... You have the mix between stone sharpening and using a machine. And it's not like you can set your angle and you have maximum versatility, but it really will show you how to be better at your... It'll help you with your geometry if you're a knife maker. It made me a better knife maker by a mile, no question. And when I'm sharpening my knives, I'm no longer taking out material. I'm no longer putting I'm not undercutting the heel, which happens a lot. Now that I've seen that I've done that, now I can see where other people are doing it too. And a lot of that comes from you're making a thin knife and then you're using the belts. And then because the belts are really fast and next thing you know, your heel just is a little bit more closer to the spine than the rest of the knife. And all of a sudden it's just like, no one really noticed. But all of a sudden, you know, this is the reason why it's happening. It's because you're taking off too much material. And the Tormek will help you do that. So I can't wait to go to Sweden. I'm going to go to Sweden in, like I said, I think a week and a half. And I will be reporting from there. So I can't wait to talk to them and learn all about their company. But highly recommend checking out Tormek, Tormek.com, or Tormek_sharpening on Instagram. And with that said... First, I want to apologize, and it's an old story, and it's really stupid, and I want to apologize because we've had technical issues again, and there's a couple things. Number one, I want to thank my guy, Craig Lockwood, who's been super helpful to me, producing the show, also being my podcasting partner with Mareko Momasi on Knife Talk. I've been doing it for like seven, eight years, something like that. I don't know what to say. We use these platforms, and then there's like when I always interview people or have people on with, I'm not going to get into it. We had problems. This episode should have been with Joyce Cuddy, who's fantastic. We had a great conversation. I don't know if it was her computer, if it was my computer, if it was the service. Meanwhile, when you put the tracks together, there was lag. When I had Lyle on, something happened, and it was like there was a little bit of lag, and towards the end, it sounded like I was just like cutting her off every 5 minutes, which was like, you know, parent of the year shit, and that was being sarcastic. But we were going to have Joyce Cuddy on, and next thing you know, we listened to it. Craig said, it's really, you know, there's a lot of problems. Like I said, I've said this in the past, pardon me, I'm not feeling 100%, but at the same time, I'm like, you know, let's make this happen. The problem is like, it seems as though every time we use one of these services, there's like a 6 month period where we have, you know, a string of problems. And I know we had a problem on Knife Talk recently too. So trust me, nothing more frustrating than technical problems. And you don't want to hear about it because it's just like, I know, we know all about it. So I wanted to do a catch up. And the funny thing is when we realized that Joyce's episode wasn't good, There's a lot going on at Fader Knives where usually what I would do in the past would I'd be like, all right, well, let's just re-record. It's too crazy over here. And I wanted to tell this wild story of why it's one of the reasons why it's too crazy here. And it's a little bit of background in Fader Knives, a little bit of background with me, and we'll get into it. So it's been crazy over here. We've recently invested in, we have a new web designer and a web strategist, and we're hiring a photographer, and we're kind of, not a rebranding, but as my business partner Tony says, it's a precision branding. We're kind of changing things away. We're trying to get to the next level, and we're not buying power hammers. We're not buying all this bullshit. We're investing in the company, so we've really kind of made a real firm investment in this company. And the funniest part is, like, we paid a down payment for this guy, and it's a lot of money, way more money than I've spent on situations like this. And everything's hand to mouth at Fader Knives. We don't have investors. We don't have, you know, I'm not digging into my pockets over at the Fader household. We're selling stuff, and we're able to kind of, like, you know, budget everything so we can, you know, save for stuff like that. For some reason, every time I do anything, like we invest, which is supposed to be helpful to me, I end up having to do more work. So we're now at this point where I have just a laundry list of things I have to do for this web designer. I got to make new knives for the photographs, and it's just a lot of work. So that was one thing that I was just like, all right, well, you know, I don't have time to really redo the Joyce episode, and I'm going to have her back. Joyce Cuddy is fantastic. If you're not following Cuddy Knives, you're making a huge mistake. Talking about someone who's an incredible angler, an incredible knife maker, incredible gardener and cook, and she's a musician and a professor. She's really kind of put everything together, and she's just a fantastic human being. And as far as a knife maker goes, she's got some really great background in why she's a knife maker and the things that she knows. But regardless, couldn't figure out how to do it. Trying to figure it out, very depressed, and all of a sudden, I get a message from my landlord. And my landlord sent me a message last week, and he said, hey, I need to talk to you about something. Are you down at the shop? And obviously, you get worried when your landlord needs to talk to you about something. Obviously, it's worrisome. You never know. Listen, we just had, they just changed the management people at the building, and we had adjustments on our electrical bill, and you never know. Maybe directions are changing. Who knows? Maybe they're making, you know, good news, bad news, whatever. Let me take a sip. I'm also under the weather. So my landlord says, I need to talk to you about something. Let me back everything up. So when I was in college and I was an art major, I told my dad, I want to be an art major. My dad was a painter, and he says, well, I really don't want you to be an art major. But if you're going to be an art major, if you want to be a working artist, you have to work for artists. And this is, you're talking 1992, 93. And I thought you just like become an artist and people find you. This is before, you know, the internet was not around, you know. So he said to me, I need you to start, if you're going to do this, you're going to take it seriously. You need to work with artists. You can't just sit around painting or whatever you're going to do. So I found this sculptor in Brooklyn. I don't know how I found it. It was like a word of mouth situation. This guy who was really, he was a young guy. He was vibrant. He was very involved in the city at a studio in Brooklyn. He was very involved in music, and he would go to all these art events, and he was super cool. And he did metal sculpture, and it was really cool, and it was really hip. And he was like everything I wanted to be as an artist, you know, a young working artist working in the shop all day and then going to openings and parties.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Parties and clubs all night and just like coming in like a rock star. Guy was like fucking cool. So I got an intern. So I sent him a message and I said, you know, or I sent him a phone call. Or I don't know. It wasn't before email. So I called him or I don't know what I want. And I said, I'm like 19 or something like that. He's like, I'm a artist. I want to be a metal worker and I want to work for other artists. I want to be an intern. Are you accepting any interns? Next thing you know, I'm going to Brooklyn on the summers. And I'm working for him and I'm doing some like hard labor shit. Like he would take old rusty diamond plate and he would give me an 8-inch grinder, not a fucking, you guys are used to 4.5-inch grinders, an 8-inch grinder, 9-inch grinder, fucking thing weighed like 15 pounds with this big wire cup. And my job all day long would be, I'd go out on the dock with this huge piece of diamond plate and I would have to take off all the rust with this wire wheel with an 8-inch grinder, ridiculous, all day, every day. And it was like, he would, you know, I was preparing material to be cut up and then used in sculpture and it was brutal. But at the same time, he was, you know, like he'd come to the shop on a fixed wheel bike without his shirt on, and or he would come skateboarding in the shop with sunglasses on, and he was just a fucking cool guy. And I'm just thinking, like, this is the life for me. I made the right decision. So one of the crazy things is we were doing all these great projects, and they were vibrant and young and youthful and just like everything you're looking for and cool, and it seemed like very MTV, and it was like Yo MTV Raps, and music was very kind of like part of the whole vibe, and there was a lot of graffiti style, and it was just like everything was like, this shit is cool. This isn't like that kind of like put your finger up in the air and like put the beret on art shit. So one day this guy walks into the shop. I think he had a couple dogs with him. He's a small guy, short guy, and he is filled with energy. This was a customer of the sculptor I was working for. He came in and he was just bouncing off the walls with ideas and enthusiasm, and he was like this total character. And my boss at the time, this young sculptor, was just like, loved this guy. And this patron would come in and he would just be excited. And we got to do this and we got to do that. And whatever you want. And he basically gave my boss free range. We would do everything, anything he wanted. And he just trusted what we were doing. And at one point, this patron owned all these restaurants on the Upper West Side. And we would be coming up with these wacko ideas, and he loved it. And he would just do anything we wanted to do. He wanted to capture the vibrance of what my boss was doing, what we were doing with high colors and crazy steel, and like, you know, I want to make this. Hey, can you think you could make the sign for the restaurant be all, you know, every word be a physical vegetable? Yeah, of course, no problem. So he would give me and my partner the other worker there, we would be cutting pipe and welding it together and keeping the MIG welds and running them down and making like, you know, letters out of like, you know, the J would be a carrot or the O would be like a onion and the S would be, or whatever. We would have every different letter was a sculptural steel, you know, a sculptural steel vegetable or a piece of food that represented the letter. And then we were all together. That was the word. And then we'd hang it up and he'd come out and he loved everything we did. And he was super supportive. And he was the kind of, all of a sudden as a 19-year-old person, I'm seeing this patron of, this is how patronage is. This is how when you're a sculptor, this is what you're, you know, you have like customers or clients, and they're just supportive of everything you do because they love everything you do. And it was crazy because we would do these wacko like tables with like asteroids, and we were doing all these ashtrays with like heavy 300-pound ashtrays with like orbits and the rings of Saturn and just like surfers with their dicks out and all these crazy things. And he just, everything we made, he loved and he paid for. And I was just like, this, anytime this guy would come in, he would be super supportive and we would, you know, whatever he wanted. So, you know, as things, you know, we did stuff for his restaurants, everything was cool. And as time goes by, we, you know, obviously we never saw, I didn't see him again. I stopped working for this artist and I went on with my life. And I started to realize that that was never the case in terms of your relationships. If you're a working artist, you're never going to get this perfect customer who is just brimming with enthusiasm and support for what you're doing. You just don't get it. There was one time I was thinking like, he basically set the tone for an unreasonable expectation of how customers are going to react to you and be supportive of you. To the point where there would be times where I'd get reached out and to do like commissions. Like I've done commissions. I did a commission. Probably one of my favorite commissions was I did a life-sized egret. A life-sized egret and out of steel. And I had such a good time doing it. And it was probably, I'll put it in the if you go to Full Blast Podcast on Instagram, I'll put it in the in one of the pictures in this episode. So go follow Full Blast Podcast on Instagram. It was a steel life-sized egret. Turned out to be probably easy top five favorite sculptures of all time. You get commissions to do that stuff, but then you get commissions like, I had one woman, this is back in, geez, before the 2000s, and I got reached out to do a steel portrait of her dog. And, you know, it was a golden retriever or something like that. And I'm thinking, okay, all right, I just look at a picture of a golden retriever. I don't really need to meet this dog. She goes, oh, no, I need you to come to my farm. I need you to spend time with my dog. And I need you to be able to capture. I need you to be able to capture the dog. And I want you to do a abstract interpretation of this dog. And I said, well, okay. So I had to take the train up 2 hours. And I had to go to this person's farm and I had to sit with this fucking dog, which is a perfectly nice dog, golden retriever. What's wrong with a golden retriever? You know, no problem. But I'm just like, in my mind the whole time, I'm just like, I really don't need to be, this is a lot of work for, you know, cause I'm gonna knock one out. I'm sitting with the dog, throwing the dog. It's like a standard golden retriever. There's nothing special about it. And she's like, I need you to capture this. I need you to capture that. So I get back on the train 2 hours back. And I'm just like, I took pictures. I had to get the film developed. This is before, before digital cameras. So I had to like get film. So I like take pictures with film of this fucking dog. And then I had to go get it developed. I had to go back in the city, get it developed. And then, you know, I had to transform the steel into this goddamn dog. And I just, in my mind, I'm just like, just fucking knock something out, dude. So I knocked something out and she was just like, I finally brought it to her and she's like, I need you to change this one part, but otherwise it's perfect. This was before digital photos. This is before sending emails. And, you know, I don't even know how I got a picture to her. Maybe I put it in the mail. Who knows? But I'm just like, I got your fucking dog right here. But it was like the exact opposite of this, you know, the original, the first patron I got to see. I've dealt with people who are just like ridiculous and they micromanage. I've dealt with people who just they want something and they want it inexpensive, but they don't care about, you know, your decision making and they don't really know about your work. And I've had terrible experiences. You know, I've had good experiences. I've had terrible experiences. Flash forward, you know, let's just say 20 years. I move into the town that I'm in. I'm disillusioned with the art community here in general just because, look, they're all looking for their own help and they just, you know, without going into it too far, I think I went into it a few, some episodes ago, I talked about how, you know, there was like this organization and it just wasn't really, I mean, they did a good job, but it wasn't really for me. So I got invited to do, I had already established myself as doing these giant lures, and this is before I started making knives. And I was doing this, and I got invited to an outdoor event, and they wanted me to do a big display of the fishing lures, because they look great. I would make this giant totem, and they'd all be on there, and it was like, it was definitely like, it was almost like their own version, my own version of like a giant totem with these huge, each lure was like 3 foot, 4 foot long. And if they're all, you know, stacked on top of each other, it was like this kind of wild thing to see. And it was, so I put them all up there, and then all of a sudden I'm talking to some people, and then somebody comes up to me, and he's just really excited. And I'm seeing a familiarity, but I'm not really placing it, and words are being said, and we're talking, and he's got such energy. And all of a sudden I realize this is the guy who I met 20 years ago when I was working for this sculptor. And I said, are you Louis? And he goes, yeah. And I said, I don't know if you remember this, but I was working for this sculptor when we were working on your restaurants. And it was like a bomb went off. He went fucking crazy. And he was excited. And he remembered those days when we started telling stories. And I had worked on so much of the stuff at his restaurants. And I was, you know, behind the scenes, you know, working for this artist. And we were just telling all these great stories and catching up. And he just immediately grabbed me. And he's like, we're going over to this restaurant that I'm opening up. And I want you to do some stuff. And we went down the street, and the restaurant was closed, and he opened the door, and we went in, and he's like, you're going to be part of this, and I want you to be part of this. And I ended up over the time, it was so great because he was so excited, and he said, I need you to do this, I need you to do that, I need you to do this, I need you to do that. And it was like, I want it to be your versions, and I want you to, and it was like this incredible, like, after years of going through it, I like reached a new relationship with one of the first patrons, incredible supportive patrons I'd ever met. So as the years go by, I'm making, you know, we're very close. And there was something about the idea of like, and everything's not about money. It wasn't about money as much as it was like, I want to keep the ball rolling in the best possible way. And this guy wants me to keep the ball rolling. So if I felt as though this was like a long-term relationship, and that whatever he needed, I'm going to cough it up, because then he comes back. And I did sculpture for the outside of his restaurant. He needed brackets, I made the brackets. He needed railings, I made the railings. He needed, there was a one restaurant, he needed a sign holder that holds the sign for the restaurant. No problem. Anything he needed, I knocked it out. And I made the decision that I was just like, I love this guy. He's full of enthusiasm, super financially supportive, super generous. It was always, he never questioned my designs. He just encouraged me in the things that I was doing. And it was like, I want to keep this relationship going. So I'm trying to remember some of the stories. I made these giant sculptures that went on the outside of his building, and he loved it. I would do the drawings, and then he just loved it. He made some little tiny changes, but once I made it, he was super excited. Anytime he needed something done, we would do it. And I really felt like in my mind, I was just like, not only am I going to come up with it. And you know, a lot of artists and a lot of like, worker, not when I say work craftsman, sometimes a lot of them get a little bit like a diva where they're just like, well, I don't know if I can make the deadline. My opinion is, for me, is tell me your deadline and I'm going to come in a couple days early. Like I feel as though for me, that's always the direction where it's just like, not only am I going to make your deadline, I'm going to come in a couple hours. I'm a couple days early in regards to a lot of this stuff. I'm going to be the guy that when you ask for something, they're going to say he's going to make it happen. And that was like, for me, especially with Louis, that has always been the key, because I remember he invited me to his house, his beautiful home. And then all of a sudden I look, and then there's one of the tables that I worked on 30 years ago. That I worked on, he brought it from the restaurant. I was just like, I made this table. It's in your house 30 years ago. And it was just, everything was really great. Super supportive. And when I started getting involved with knife making, he was super excited. He actually took a class when we had classes here, not in my shop now, but when my friend John opened up Hudson River Ironworks across the way, I told him, and he came in, he took the class. He had a fun time. He was all into it. He was just very supportive. And when it came to sculpture, if he needed sculpture made, he'd call me. and I'd make sculpture for the restaurant. Maybe he'd have this new restaurant. He's like, hey, Jeff, you know, that sculpture would look really great here. Anything, you know, when it came to the sculpture that he wanted, he'd call me. And it was like, it was a great relationship to the point where I know that I needed my car was falling apart, and I talked to him about it. He's a big car guy. He helped me get another car, and he traded it for sculpture. And it's just like, whatever I needed, he got. Whatever he needed, I got. It was just like, it's turned into this great relationship. So when I was really getting involved with the knife making, in the first couple of years, I was working out of the shed outside of my house. And there was a lot of limitations based off the size, which I didn't care about. But a lot of it was the noise. I had neighbors. I couldn't work certain hours. Everything about it was not good. And I really wasn't able to do a lot of forging because I'm in this residential area. And it was like, I couldn't, you know, the thought of even having an anvil was a problem. Anytime I knocked anything, people would come over and say, oh, Jeff, what are you doing? No one complained, but they wanted to know what I was doing. And that I don't want. So he and I were talking. We were at a party one night. We were very involved in the town that we're in, and I would see him at a party, and we'd always have a good time. And, you know, whatever he needed, I got. Whatever I needed, he got. It was like this perfect relationship, and it wasn't one of these Goniff-related relationships. When I say Goniff, it's like someone who takes all the time. Like, I want him to do well, and I want to be part of him. I want my opinion about myself, and this is based off of, like, people that I've known for my whole life. When you talk about me, I want to make sure people don't say, what an asshole, or he's all talk, or you can't count on him, or he's undependable. That's the one thing I don't want, because I know people in my life who are like that. They're all talk. And when it comes down to it, you're just like, hey, I'll believe it when I see it. When my name comes up, especially with this guy or other people that I care about, I want them to know that my name is like, if you ask me to do something, it's done. Period. You know, there's no question. I'm going to get it done one way or the other. There's not going to be excuses. There's a lot of guys I know who make excuses. Well, you know, this person's sick. I don't make excuses, and I want to make sure that in the subconscious of people, they know that you're never going to think that I am going to fleabag out on things, or you can't count on me, or whatever. So we were talking at a party, and all of a sudden he said, you know, what's going on? He's like, I said to him, you know, at some point I got to find a new shop. I got to get out of this town. I can't be working in my shed forever. And he goes, well, I got this space in the back of my building, and I want you to take a look at it. I want you to leave. Don't leave this town. I want you here. I want you to take a look. So I came back, I took a look, it was perfect. I built it out. It was like an abandoned space that was just used for storage, and it had electrical, it had a heater. All I had to do was, you know, pay for this, that, and the other thing, and the price was right, and whatever he wanted, and he had me close, and it was a perfect, perfect situation. That's why I got my shop. So Louis became my landlord, and he was just unbelievably great. Super supportive. He liked it. Anytime he needed something, I was close by. And, you know, and I would also drop anything at the hat. I mean, his generosity and support to me has been like, there's never been another person in my life as financially, with the exception, obviously, of my wife, and the exception of, you know, like certain people in my family. Outside of my family, there's never been another person who's been more enthusiastic and supportive financially and just encouraging than Louis. There's nobody. And to the point where it's like, he needs something, whatever you need, I'll drop everything at the hat. I will drop everything to take care of whatever he needs. And I don't say no. A lot of times people say, well, I don't know. Fucking no problem. I got you. Like, that's what I say with him. Don't worry, I got you. So a number of years ago, and he gives a frantic call. Hey, I got this. It's usually a call of excitement. Like, he's at a meeting and he's just like, I'll call Jeff. I bet Jeff could do this. And then he'll just call me in the middle of a meeting, and it's like mass, you know, and he'll go on and on and on. And I'll just say, whatever you want, Louis, I got you. Whatever you want, I'll do whatever you want. And I really, it's become this relationship in the past, geez, 12 years, since we reconnected, we've been having a really great relationship in terms of like doing stuff for each other for about 12 years. Like, he invites me to parties. He gets invited to these crazy parties. And he's like, hey, Jeff, come on, me and the guys, we're going to go to this party. No problem, whatever you want. And it's always crazy. And we have drivers. And it's bananas. And it's always fun. And he's funny. And we're breaking each other's balls. And it's like, there's never this situation where I'm not looking for something from him. You know, and at the same time, it's like, it's everything, it's just great. So he calls me up. This is before the pandemic. And he goes, hi, I'm with the police chief. And I have this great idea. We're trying to raise money for the police department because, you know, they're trying to get stuff done. And they want to do this gun buyback program and where people relinquish their firearms and then we give them money, but the state doesn't give them money. So we have to raise the money for it. So I want to raise the money. And I have this great idea. We're going to get all these guns and you're going to make a giant sculpture of these guns. And in my mind, in Louis's big Second Amendment, I believe in all the amendments. Personally, my personal opinion is I love this country, and regardless of the political persuasions and regardless of the things, I don't want anything changed. I want there to be obviously laws and stuff like that, but like when you start to fuck with amendments, then it's a slippery slope to, you know, disaster. So like, I believe in the, you know, all this stuff, but at the same time, I'm not really like a, anything I do is not very political. Like, I think that if you were to look at my work and listen to my work and stuff like that, you'd know that I'm not a very politically active person. So he says to me, we're going to get this thing. I work with the police department. We're going to raise all this money and they're going to do the gun buyback program. And then you're going to make this giant sculpture. It's going to be at the restaurant. So the first thing I said is, no problem, whatever you want, I'm with you. And I know I've talked about this a couple of years ago, but I'll just kind of like So in the beginning, you know, once again, with Louis, anything you want, no problem. So part of me is just like, what am I going to do? Because I'm not a politically, my sculpture has never been political. And even on this podcast, I'm not political. I'm not controversial. My controversies are bullshit. Like, don't eat your soup with a fork shit. It's just like, none of my controversies, any controversial things I talk about are not going to lead to potentially someone throwing a brick through my window. You know what I mean? Like, there are certain podcasters, especially in the maker community, who seem to think because you have a microphone in front of you that you have all the answers to life's problems. None of them are nuanced. None of them are anything other than stuff that they've heard before. And frankly, take any of the makers podcast, any maker podcast, name anyone that we know of that my listeners listen to, any of them. And I'm not going to name particular names, but I think that you could take every single one of them. And when they start, you can tell there's this confidence that once in a while somebody will tackle a very nuanced political situation, and then they'll show their own un-nuanced repeating of words that they've heard before based off of the feelings that they've had in regards to the unfairness of the situation that they're in. I don't do that. Fuck you. Fuck you. I'm not interested. And when I hear it, trust me, all my friends who do these podcasts, they all have this high. They're sitting in front of their microphone, and then I'm going to ponder, and I'm going to simplify a very complex issue in a very normal way that makes it very clear, and it makes people in the professions very stupid sounding, but I'm very smart, and I figured out all the problems. The fuck out of here. I'm not doing that. And I'm not even going to pretend like I'm going to do that. So when it comes to making a sculpture out of a gun, the problem is there's a lot of, when you're just a little sculpture background, when you're making steel sculpture is the toughest stuff, because if you start to use found objects in the sculpture, like let's just say you found this giant awesome hook and you weld it in, but you allow people to see the hook in the final dimension, the final outcome, you're subconsciously still carrying the vocabulary and information about that hook in that sculpture that's welded up. So regardless of whether or not you like it or not, if you weld a chain into a sculpture, you're carrying the vocabulary of that chain in the sculpture. So if I'm to make a sculpture out of a gun, you're going to carry the history or the viewer's opinions of this fucking gun, whether you like it or you don't like it in the sculpture. So there is, it's a very, very tricky situation, and it's a very, very hard way to not be political with the subject matter in itself. So in the beginning, I'm just like, well, number one is I didn't want anyone else to have these guns. There are some flea bag welders in this area, and I just like, in my mind, I'm picturing these motherfuckers just MIG welding the guns into a peace sign and just like being like, ta-da! And it's like this on the nose, complete fucking horse shit. I don't want them to have it. I don't want, these are like, it's really hard to get, and I'll explain how the guns work. It's really hard to get decommissioned guns. Like it's illegal to chop guns up. Like if I were to have an old gun and I would chop it up to use it for sculpture, you in theory could call the BATF and there could be an investigation. It is illegal for you to chop a gun up without formal things. So the way it works is the police, we raised all this money. The police had a buyback program, and we're going to talk a little bit about the buyback program, whether you like them or not. And I'm not going to, once again, this will not be controversial. This will be down the middle, independent of people's opinions of all this stuff. So whatever. And I don't have a dog in this fight, except for the fact that I don't want other fucking guys to have this amazing, very hard to get, potentially illegal subject matter. I want it. Like this is not, I'm pro gun. I'm anti gun. This is me saying, I don't want these motherfuckers to have it. You know, I'm the one who wants it. I'm the one who gets it. You know, down the line, I'll do something with some of the excess stuff. Who knows? There's a lot of opportunities. These motherfuckers can't have it. I'm being very greedy in this situation. So what happens is the guns, people come, they relinquish their guns. And a lot of the times after talking to some law enforcement guys, after I'm talking to some gun friends of mine who are gun sellers, I have friends who sell, you know, legally, they legally are part of, you know, they're very involved with, you know, law enforcement, whatever that, what they say is these aren't guns that are, most of them are not guns coming off the streets. Most of them are, if you have an old gun and you try to sell it, you maybe won't get a lot of money for it. Like you can go down the right, you know, legal path and somebody will say, you know, this thing's pretty fucked up, I got to fix it. And I'll give you like $75. If you go to gun buyback program, they're going to give you like a lot more than it would be otherwise. So you're getting sight unseen more money when you give a gun. If you're trying to get rid of a gun and you want to make some money off it, could be your old grandfather's guns, rusty old bullshit. It could be something that's been in your family and you just don't feel comfortable with it. It could be something. But if you want to get top dollar, especially if it's in terrible condition, go to gun buyback program. That's what I've learned. It's not like, you know, maybe there's like a small portion of them are, you know, like mothers who found guns of their kids and they're just like, no questions asked. But most of the fact remains is, and this is the unwritten, unspoken truth about the gun buyback programs, you will get, if you're trying to get rid of an old piece of shit and you want to get maximum dollar without having to negotiate, if you go to a gun buyback program, you'll get more money from them than you will if you try to sell it to like a gunsmith or something like that. That's one of the things I learned. So what happens is the guns go to the police. The police come in, they take pictures and they, you know, register every single one of them. And what they do is they will, and they did it. We did a couple at the shop. They'll take a picture of it, then they'll destroy it, and then they'll take another picture of it and they'll send it to the state. So there's like a record of everything that's done. And what they do now, which is, this is actually a faster way to do it. And probably the easiest way is what they'll do is they'll go to, I think what they did in this situation was they had all the guns. It's a lot of guns. I mean, they got like 300, something like that, rifles. And some of this stuff is, you know, like BB guns and shit. And some of it's like crazy stuff too. So they'll go to the parking lot or some area at the police department. And then they'll call the Department of Public Works. The Department of Public Works will show up with a truck and like a acetylene torch. And then they'll basically like, they'll take a picture of the knife or the gun, and then they'll cut through where the trigger is. So they'll like make a, you know, torch cut through the trigger to the outside of the gun. So it renders it impossible. You can't even take it apart. You know, there's no parts. You can't like, I mean, there are some like little things they don't, I mean, they're not doing everything, but they make the gun unusable. They take another picture and then they put it in a box. So when the, in the beginning, I was just like, ah, oh, Jesus Christ, do I want to do this or not? But then in my, the greed of wanting that, you know, I used to grow up, I used to go to junkyards and get stuff and, you know, you, that's one thing, but you can get a box of fucking destroyed gun parts. I mean, you can make some shit happen. So, a part of me was just like, kind of didn't want to do it. Then the pandemic hit and I was just like, all right, good. Pandemic. I don't have to deal with this for a while because they wanted to make a big deal about it. They wanted to make it a local artist makes a big sculpture. And I was just like, part of me is just like, part of me doesn't want this smoke to the point where an article was written in a local paper and I was going to a supermarket just to get, this is like pre-pandemic. I was going to a supermarket to get some groceries. And a guy comes up to me and he goes, who I knew, not well, but I knew him. And he goes, I want to talk to you about something. This is a fucking Sunday morning. I'm getting the groceries. He goes, I need to talk to you about something. I know you're making that sculpture with guns. And let me tell you what you need to do. And you better make sure that. And he's giving me this litany of how I'm supposed to tackle the sculpture. Not knowing what I'm going to do. I had already made a proposal. I made a proposal that I was really trying to not be controversial because the city doesn't want to fucking be involved with me doing like a giant fucking, you know, fuck you, giant middle finger. They don't want me to be pro or anti. I got to straddle a crazy fence in this situation. This is like an unwinnable situation. So guy comes up to me and he goes, I know what you're doing and I don't want anything to do with it. And you need to do this and you need to do that. And it was such a fucking production. And I was just like, bro, I'm just trying to get my groceries. I'm just trying to get this fucking head of cauliflower. You gotta leave me alone. And then I knew he was right. And I said, listen, and I got so furious because I'm just like, don't bother me while I'm in the grocery store with this. I'm having to deal with the situation already. I don't need your input. And I said to him, I don't tell you how to write your fucking books. You don't need to tell me how to do my thing. You know, don't worry about me. Don't worry about me. You worry about you. I know what I'm doing. Trust me. Never went to that grocery store again because I'd bump into people I knew. I was like, I don't need this in my life. This is too much heat. Pandemic hits. I'm like, all right, let's pretend this isn't going to happen. Let's just pretend like nobody gives a shit anymore. And I just like did not talk about it. I have all the guns in my shop. All of them were cut. All of them were, I legally have them from this. The city relinquished them to me. They're all unusable. Put them in drawers, put them in boxes. Let's just forget about it. Pandemic hits. We don't have to worry about it. And I'm just like, let's just not even worry about it. So pandemic comes back, you know, get through the pandemic. Things are starting to get back to normal. All of a sudden I get a message from Louis. He goes, I know you don't want to do the sculpture, but we really want to keep going with it. And I have not figured out how I'm going to do this goddamn sculpture. And then part of me, but at the same time, I don't want to disappoint Louis. And I already made the commitment and we did this thing with the police department. And I never took a nickel from the state, never took a nickel from the government. That was my one thing is I will not take any tax dollars for any of this. I don't even want a police person in my shop at all. I don't want a dime of tax money to go to this sculpture. I'll do it for free if I have to. We ended up working somehow with this local arts alliance, but there was no tax dollars that went to towards this sculpture. And I figured it out. What I'm going to do is, because a lot of these guns, you're fucking bullshit. That was the thing. I had one cop in here who was, we were doing, you know, media and stuff like that. And I was, you know, he handed me this gun. He's, oh, this is the finest German stainless steel. And I put it in my forge and it, green smoke came flying out. The whole goddamn thing melted in the bottom of my shop. And I said, officer, respectfully, this is aluminum. You gave me an aluminum gun. This is finest German shit. You stick to arresting people. I'll stick to the metal. I know all about it. So a lot of this stuff was all garbage anyway, and I'm thinking to myself, how the fuck am I going to make a fucking outdoor sculpture with this shit? Some of it's garbage. So there was a lot, luckily there were a lot of long guns, like rifles and shotguns and stuff like that. So what I decided to do is I really wanted to use the blacksmith concept of transforming material. I wasn't going to turn it into Damascus. I wasn't going to turn it into, there was a lot of I had to make a lot of hurdles to make this thing work. And basically what I did was I put every gun through the, every rifle through the forge, then ran it through the power hammer, and then I created a very uniform, like a ribbon almost. And then out of that ribbon, I made this, welded together this giant ribbon of steel. It was like, the ultimate idea was, you know, for years, when you see someone with a ribbon on their chest, there'd be a pink ribbon or a yellow ribbon or a red ribbon. You don't know exact, maybe you do, but you don't generally know exactly what it is. But what you do know is it's something to remember. So I thought the idea is, I'm going to make this giant ribbon, and it's going to look like, you know, it's, you're not going to know exactly what it's for, but you're going to be thoughtful in regards to thinking, okay, this is a ribbon that we look towards in regards to, it means something to someone, something to remember, whatever. It wasn't about gun violence. It wasn't about any of that shit. So I transformed the steel. I welded it all up into this giant ribbon. I put a fucking pin through it, a giant bar, so it looked like a pin. It stood on three spots. I painted it like my sculpture, like the Neptune Sunrise knives. I threw in some fucking rivets I got from the Tappan Zee Bridge. It looked nothing, and I painted it. It looked, you could not tell that they were gun parts. And it was like, it was fucking awesome. We installed it, and they wanted this big thing, and they wanted me to speak, and the city was there, and it was a whole big production. And when you looked at it, nobody knew what the fuck it was. People couldn't tell that it was steel. People couldn't tell it was material. You couldn't see the gun parts. You couldn't see any of it. It was like transformed. I wanted the idea of being able to transform material into something new and take out the vocabulary of what it was. Remember I was saying about the hook, like you'll always see the hook. If you don't see the fucking gun, you don't carry all the gun shit. So when you walk past the sculpture, you have no idea what it is. You'd have to really, and I put some little tiny details that if you really looked, you could see. But generally speaking, no one has any idea. And it was perfect because it was completely transformative to the point where the police department was like, those were really the gun parts you gave us? And I was like, yes. And I explained it and I explained it and I explained it. No, you know, all these civilians, nobody knows about forging anyway. But it was a rousing success to the point where some of the common council members came up to me. I think the mayor came up to me too. Not the mayor, one of the common council members came up to me and he goes, you really saved our ass because we were very, very concerned about what you were going to do. Because the city was kind of involved, because the police department was kind of involved. And this, if I had done a giant, like, you know, fuck the police or fuck you or guns or, you know, if I had taken any type of like position on a very, very controversial topic, gun control and gun, anything to do with guns, it's a very, very controversial situation, whether you're pro or against, or everyone has a very, very passionate and opinionated opinion, which, fine by me, I ain't that guy. So I coughed up like the greatest straddling the fence situation of all time. Let's just make it so nobody knows what the fuck they are. And let's not say anything. And I even said, when you put the plaque up, don't fucking say guns. Don't say anything. Let people just walk past it. It's not my job as an artist to spoon feed people everything. At some point, it's nice for people to do a little bit of digging. But at the same time, it's like, I don't need to hit you over the head with, this is a fucking gun rip. It was the smartest fucking thing I ever did, and I never said a goddamn word about it. I never even said the word guns. I never said anything, and I never had any heat. I had friends who did. My friends over at a travel website wanted to start a fight, and they were talking about it, and they got some gun people involved, and they were like, this is some fucking bullshit. Trust me, if you're walking past the sculpture, all you're seeing is a beautiful sculpture. And if you think it's beautiful, you don't. But I will, like, there was the toughest sculpture I'd ever had to do, because I was just like, and they had, the press was there and the local thing, it went. And the best part was, I was just like, if I wanted to get more problems, I could have like made it controversial and then that would have been better for my career. But I'm just like, I just want to live in this town without people throwing bricks through my windows. That's the litmus test in regards to, that's the litmus test in regards to what I want. I don't want bricks coming through my window. Worked out perfect. Louis was thrilled. The city council was thrilled. One counselor was just said to me, he's like, we were really like holding our breath. We were holding our breath. We were afraid you were going to motherfuck us. He didn't say that, but you didn't get the point. Great sculpture. Looks great. Still looks great. People have no idea what the fuck it is. Perfect. I did my job. I did my job as to like have my windows pristine and brickless. There will be no bricks coming through my windows. There will be no, I say on this podcast and on Knife Talk, I slither through most things. This was the wormiest slither I've ever done. I could not be happier about it. Louis's happy. Everybody's happy. I'm doing more sculpture for him. And it was, you know, it was great. So fast forward to 2 weeks ago, you know, like I said, whenever Louis wants something, no problem, I got you. He invites me to parties. We go to parties together. He needed me to do, I actually did, I got a call from this FBI organization that like gives money to the families of fallen victims. And they said, do you think you could put up some sculpture for the fallen, you know, this fallen victims thing? I said, no problem. I took a revolver. I squirted it out. I put it in the wall, put it on the power hammer, fucking mounted on a thing, welded a screw on the end of the thing, mounted it on a piece of walnut, give it to the FBI. I went to this FBI party. I had, you know, and ended up having all this funny conversations with these FBI guys. And, you know, I have all that stuff and it's still a lot of fun. Louis calls me up because, hey, you at the shop, I need to talk to you about something. So now I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, no problem. Whatever you want, I got you. But at the same time, like, there was just a management change with the landlord department, with his management thing. And I just went, and we had our electrical bill just went up based on some things. And I was just like, I hope this is okay. I hope everything's okay. I'm thinking to myself, as a fader, as an old fader, the new faders don't do this, but as an old fader, it's expect the worst and be happy when it doesn't happen. So expectations very low and acceptance very high. Called him up and I'm like, hey, well, Louis, what's going on? And he says, I have a project for you. He says, I got this, this Jeep. And what I need is I need you to build a platform on the back. I'm like, well, tell me more about it. So he's started going to Burning Man. He started going to Burning Man and he's like, we're going to build an art Jeep. And I need you to, and this Jeep is getting transported. And the Jeep is like it's like an Indian farmer's Jeep or something like that. It's not meant for the road. He says, we're getting it kitted out. We're getting it all squared away and it's going to go to the playa. I need you to build this platform that rides on the back so people can stand on it. We're only going to go 5 miles an hour. And I'm thinking to myself, structural stuff. I don't really do a lot of that, but no problem. So we took a look at it and he goes, and you only have like a week. You only have a week to do it. So I'm like, no problem, whatever you need, no problem. So we figured it out and he had this, and then we're waiting for the trailer hitch to show up. There was a specific trailer hitch that we were going to build basically this platform that was going to fit into the trailer hitch, the acceptance, what is it? The acceptance post. Are we going to call it the acceptor? The trailer hitch will be the hitch part will be the platform and it will fit into the, I don't know about cars, ladies and germs, and I don't know about this stuff, but it was the acceptor. The trailer hitch acceptor. And don't trust me. I don't need to be clarified. That I can tell you. No interest. So what we did was we didn't have a lot of time. We found the material and then I found an old trailer hitch and I cut that fit into the trailer hitch. We were waiting for the trailer hitch to show up, but I'm under the impression that all trailer hitches are standard. The acceptor is standard. I like calling it the acceptor. So they had an old one. I cut all the knobs, the hitch parts. So it was a solid square shaft that fit in the acceptor. And then we got some angle and I made a platform. They had some diamond plate and we screwed on some diamond plate. And then we fit it, and we fit it waiting for the acceptor to come, their acceptor to come. I put it into my trailer hitch of my Jeep, and it fit. And it fit perfect, except for the fact that trailer hitches, I don't know if you know this, but they're not machined, so they're supposed to be solid. They're meant to have a little bit of slop in them so you can get them in and out, and then when you're hooked onto your trailer, hitch is hooked onto your trailer, there's a little bit of like slop, because I would imagine that if it's too tight, what could happen on the road is if it would, you know, like the next thing that's going to stop is going to be the, I don't know, a weld or something like that. Something going to fail. So you want a little slop in there so it knocks around. So we realized we had to bolt to the, so I built the thing, and then all of a sudden we realized we needed a roll bar. And I said to them, you cannot go fast. This is totally super dangerous. This is not something that you want to fucking, you know, don't worry, we're going to be on the playa, only 5 miles an hour, no problem. So we found this roll bar, and I welded the roll bar on, and we did some, you know, cantilevering and some safety. I overbuilt this goddamn thing. So the deck, the back of this deck probably weighed, Jesus Christ, maybe 75, 80 pounds, maybe even more, maybe 100 pounds. But I was just like, the fucking trailer hitch in and of itself was probably like 20 pounds. So then as I realized that what we're going to have to do is on the outside. So the whole thing fit in the trailer hitch, but I mean, there was a lot of slop. So it wasn't safe to stand on. Like, it would be moving around. So we realized we had to build some brackets to connect to the steel bumper of this Indian farmer's Jeep. And then all of a sudden, I'm ready to do it. I went to Wisconsin and came back. I'm sending Louie. All right, I need the truck. I need the Jeep because I got to take some measurements. He's like, the Jeep is at the mechanics. And I said, well, when is it coming back? And I say, he says, I don't know, but the transporter is coming on Friday. And now we're talking, this is Wednesday. The transporter is coming on Friday to take it to the playa. So you need to get this thing finished. And I'm like, no problem. And then, so every few, you know, every like half a day, I'm sending a message. Louie, when are we getting the Jeep back? I don't know. When are we getting the Jeep back? I don't know. I'm like, I need a little time. I need at least an hour. So it's Thursday afternoon. And I said, Louie, if the train, I don't know when the transporter's coming on Friday, I gotta get to finish this thing. So he's just like, well, come to the mechanic. So I drove over to the mechanic with a level and measurements, and then there's like dudes all over the Jeep, and it's like NASCAR. They're putting electrical on it and putting lights on it, and they're doing this, and they're fixing they're upgrading the engine, and they're putting giant wheels on it, and they're like, it's like fucking awesome. And the whole thing is, this is fun. For me, it's like, this is not of like a life or death thing. This is just like, let's make this fucking dude's shit rock. And let's make sure that Jeff's got some good street cred. Go in there, measure the trailer hitch. And then I have to put this, I put the level up on the trailer, on the end of the acceptor of the trailer. And I'm measuring where I meet to the bumper and how much room I have. And then I come back to the shop, and then I'm cutting angles, and I'm figuring out how much space I have to put these angles on, and I get it painted, and I'm redoing things and more measurements. And I don't have a lot of time, and my shop is not set up to be a fabrication shop. Back in the day, if this came to one of the fabrication shops I worked at, no problem. I got you. And you know, the welder's set up and the table's there and this layout table's there, and you just cut some shit and put it together and easy, no, 1, 2, 3. My shop is not set like that. I take the MIG welder and I put it away. This whole place is not really meant to be a fabrication shop. So when it becomes a fabrication shop, it's like a fucking disaster. It's like a bomb goes off in here. It's fun, but I also hate it too. The lifting up, bending over and lifting up, and then the wire. My MIG, the stinger end of my MIG is so long, and if it's coiled, then it doesn't spit out, and I'm at it's not the greatest MIG in the world, and there are problems, and it's finicky, and me, everything is a struggle. So Friday comes around, transporter's supposed to come here. I get a call from Louie. The truck will be the Jeep will be done by noon. I said, just bring it right here. bring it to the shop. I'm ready to go. I got the thing painted. I got it all ready to go. I have everything also by the door. So like as soon as the Jeep comes in, we install the deck. Then I mark where the holes go for the angles that are going to be bolted into. Everything's now mechanical. I got special high grade bolts, half inch bolts, but are specifically for weight, and they're structural, and they're you know what I'm talking about. They're real high level. And now I'm not focusing on the welding of the parts. Now we're doing it mechanically, fastening and bolting, and we had lock washers, and everything is by the book. By the book. Ain't no, I mean, by my book, by cross your fingers book. Honestly, you know, we're going to also jump around on it and see what happens. So he comes over, drive, I'm on my way. I hear this fucking Jeep coming at 90 miles an hour down the path. I can hear the rocks flying and this fucking beautiful, crazy orange Jeep with these giant tires comes, and this madman's at the wheel, turns it around. We stick in the fucking deck. I make the measurements, and then they got and then Luis, the other guy, is working on this while everybody's working on it. Just like wherever the car is parked, somebody's working on the Jeep. It's fucking awesome. And I bring it in, and they're talking, and they're working on this. And then the upholstery guy comes down the road, and he's adding the upholstery. And it's like a fucking madness. But it's the most fun, crazy, beautiful madness. Louis has surrounded himself with all these creative people who want him to do well, and they make whatever he wants, and it's just always something crazy. And so then I had this giant Impala skull that I made we'll talk about the Impala skull. So I mount the deck, we mark the holes, I drill all the holes, we put it all together, I get the whole thing up and then I start to ratchet down the bolts to the grill. So it's now connected by the hitch. I got the trailer hitch in there, I got the bolts, their angles going straight to the steel bumper. I got four bolts. As soon as the first bolt gets tight, it gets on that fucking thing, and it is solid, super duper solid. And I talked to the mechanic when we were at the mechanic shop, and he was talking about the hitch. He's like, yeah, this hitch is totally rated for this kind of weight. Don't worry about that. The whole idea is Louis wants some, you know, he wants to be on the ply with a couple of girls hanging off the back going 5 miles an hour, I promise. Or, you know, the coolers on the back or whatever. So then we came up with the idea that I made years ago. Louis started to do these restaurants, and he says, do you think you could make a beer tower? And I'm thinking to myself, probably. So what a beer tower is like, it's basically like your bar top, and there's like a tube that comes out of the bar top, and then it turns into a T. So think about there are a lot of different variations, but think about like a T. And then the inside is hollow. So the tube leads to the T, but when you looked inside the T, there's nothing there. So it's like it's all open. So you would cut away the top part of the T, you cut away the inside, and then you'd weld it to the thing so you can run your pipes up to the T and then break them, and then you pop some holes in for the taps. So I had made a beer tap for him at one of his restaurants, and then what you do is you carefully cut almost like the top, and then you put in some bolts and stuff so they can unscrew the top, and then they can work into all the beer taps. So I've made for Louis now, I've made 1, 2, 3 beer taps, and they were fun, and it happened to have 4x4 galvanized posts. And then I would take away some of the galvanized, I'd cut some holes, weld them all up, put a cap at the sides, make a nice plate. And then one of the restaurants he had, he was just like, what do you think we could put on there that'd be cool? And he was in my shop, and my dad gave me this old Impala skull. And the Impala skull was from a hunter friend of his who had passed away. So I inherited this Impala skull. So he said, you think you could put a skull on there? And the Impala skull is really cool because it's just a skull, but then the horns, the antlers, are like a twist. It's almost like a wine. It's like a corkscrew almost. And I said, what if I put an Impala skull on? Maybe a steel Impala skull. He goes, that's what I want. So I made this beer tap, and then I made this steel, life-size steel Impala skull. And I'll put a picture of that in the Full Blast podcast notes too. It was awesome. And I said, and then when the restaurant closed, the Impala skull came off, and I mounted the Impala skull in my shop, and I was like, you know, whatever. So I said to Louie, I was like, you know, it'd be really cool if we put that Impala skull on the hood. So he's just like, fuck yeah, let's do it. This is badass. So when the Impala skull was mounted to the roof, I mean, it's madness. It's like fucking crazy. When the Impala skull is mounted to the hood of the Jeep, the corkscrew horns, almost, or antlers, whatever the fuck that fucking thing is, it almost looks like it's got movement. So it's like, it's almost like hair that's being blown back. So the fucking thing was great. We put the whole thing together, and then Louie got on it. We jumped around on it. It wasn't moving. I kind of gave some explanation in regards to this, that, the other thing, and they drove off, and he was on the back screaming and hollering, and it was awesome, and it was so much fun, and it was so much work. But at the same time, I've created this fucking awesome relationship where it's not all about money sometimes. Like, sometimes, like, these weird, wild memories are more important. And I feel as though a lot of knife makers get in this position of, like, one guy was talking, I'm trying to do a pizza cutter, and a guy was telling me, he's like, yeah, I've been talking about doing some pizza cutters, and I see a lot of people selling these pizza cutters, and they're giving me these prices for these pizza cutters. And I'm just like, these motherfuckers are crazy. $2,000 for a pizza. Get the fuck out of here. Sometimes you got to look at some things about long term. And part of these relationships are about long term. And this is a relationship I've had with this guy for 30 years. Yeah, give or take, there was like 15 years where we didn't know each other were in existence. Or we didn't really know. But at the same time, it was like, anything he needs, I'll knock it out for him. And it's like a question of, you know, I'll put the picture of me on the back of the Jeep too. It's just like awesome. He went into one of the garages, turned all the lights out, turned the music on, turned the lights on. It was just everything about it. He was so happy, and it was just like, it was so much fun. It was so ridiculous. And obviously I'm not feeling 100% well, but at the same time I was like, it was the most satisfaction doing projects for someone that you believe in and who believes in you. Is far more satisfying than anything else. Like, I never built something that people, I'm trying to think if I built some, I built staircases and stuff like that. And I've definitely done more than one staircase. And I actually have built ladders. I built ladders with my friend John and my friend Megan. We built a ladder for a library. So that kind of stuff I have done, but it was like, part of me is just like, I've never done that before. I don't know if you could do it or not, but it was so much fun figuring it out. And he was so thrilled at the end of it. And we came in under the deadline. And the craziest part was once it was done, the transporter, and I'm sitting in the car, it's a Wednesday, and the transporter still hasn't, or it's Saturday, and the transporter still hasn't come. I made the deadline, no problem. It looks great. He's happy. He's thrilled. And it's just like, I'm, you know, anything this guy wants, I'm with him. I want to, you know, this is a relationship I want to have for a long time. And it's just because it's like this, it's the true understanding of the joy of making something for someone. And it's the joy of being able to problem solve things in a way that's just like you're being encouraged. And as you're being encouraged, you're creating more confidence. And then once you have more confidence, and it's just, that is the meaning of life. That's the nirvana in regards to being a maker. So I don't have a fucking story to tell you at the end. I thought about this because it was just like, it was, we were working on this great collaboration with the chef, and we're working on three other collaborations, and we're focusing on the website, and we're just like, it's stressful, and making sure that we're going to be good long term. We've got to make sure we're good short term. But at the same time, you gotta like stop everything when the real, you know, the important lifelong, the long term shit shows up. So that's all I wanted to say. I really was really excited, and it was just a funny story. And you know, maybe it doesn't really have any interest to you, but at the same time, it was like, you get a little bit of background in regards to how I do. And you know, when you ask me to do something, I do it. And you know, when you get to the position where people know you and they can count on you, there's something very liberating about that. When they know that you're not a flea bag, when they know that you're a man of your word or a woman of your word, or you're, when somebody asks you to do something and you can get it done and they know you can get it done, and then you cough it up, and then you cough it up without making a big production about it or bitching about it or like complaining about it, that is the fucking best. And that's what I'm going to say. That's the fucking best, and you're the best. So with that said, I want to thank Joyce Cuddy. I apologize. I'm going to have her on sooner rather than later. I'm going to try to fix some of the potential technical problems that are going to keep coming back, which annoys me. It's hard for me to keep saying that Knife Talk is the number one knife-related podcast on the Sherman-infested planet if we still have technical problems, but I'm still going to say it because we are the best. By all means, go follow me at Fader Knives on Instagram. By all means, go interact with this show on Full Blast Podcast on Instagram. I'm going to try to do more stuff where there's more listener engagement. If you want to send in your questions, go to Full Blast Podcast on Instagram. If you have ponderings you want me to ponder, I'm not going to do the Knife Talk shit over on Full Blast Podcast, but you have, if there's something you want to talk about, if you want me to talk about, if you want to ask my questions, we're going to be doing weird news. I know that Ben Snoer is coming on next week and we're going to be doing weird news, which I'm excited, always excited about. And hopefully we have no problems. Once again, I want to thank, Joyce Cuddy for making it happen. Joyce is the best. And, I'm really sorry that that didn't work out. We're going to get you back sooner rather than later. And, guys, we're going to see you next week. Okay. Thank you once again, Craig, take it away.